Atlantean Secrets. Foreword: The 22 books which constitute the 4 volumes of Atlantean Secrets follow a carefully arranged sequence, designed to take you through a succession of spaces of consciousness and realizations. To enjoy the effects woven behind the lines, it is therefore essential to start from the beginning of Volume 1, Sleeper Awaken. At the end of Volume 2, you will find a large map of the Temple of Israim. For a map of the counties surrounding Israim, CP 4. For a diagrammatic representation of the different worlds where this story will take you, see the Cosmological Ladder P. 374. A glossary of the main names and terms used in Atlantean Secrets can be found at the end of Sleeper Awaken. For a more comprehensive study, see the Saga's Concordance, From Israim to Philadelphia, which can be obtained from the Clairvision School's internet site. Like Flying Dragons, the Atlantean Secrets epic is musical in essence. Chasoft-actors, gods, angels and worlds each have their themes, and a number of scenes are accompanied by musical scores. This music, which forms an important part of the epic, can be heard at the Clairvision site, www.clairvision.org. A note on the use of italics. Italics have been used to indicate the following: 1. Quotes from the Law of Melchizedek. For example, one of the most misunderstood of all verses of the law was "One law, one way. Praise the Lord Melchizedek." 2. Discourses of gods, angels, and flying dragons. The White Eagle responded, "Soul of Highness, Child of Eternity, Angel of the Human Hierarchy, I have waited for you since earlier than time. And here you come, shining, punctual for the cosmic appointment, making the Mother of the Light proud of her seed." 3. Discourses engaged in by human beings, while raised to the level of consoft-sisness of gods, angels, and flying dragons, therefore including communi soft-cations through the power of the point. For example, Gervin. I point called. Please do something. Quick. 4. At times, italics have been used to emphasize a particular word in a sentence. For example, Gervin, Tayani said, "If it wasn't coming from you, I would never believe this story." From Volume 3 onwards, however, due to the marked increase in conversations with angels, gods and flying dragons, categories 2 and 3, common expression from the Law of Melchizedek have been left unitalicized. 1. The Book of the Beginnings. 1.1. The Forever Love Legend. Blue. Gigantic. Totally ancient. Totally unknown. An awesome cloud, coming from remoteness. Born to travel, it moved fast and with great ease. It illuminated the spheres with a majestic dark blue glow as no one had ever seen. Not even the gods. Not even the Nagas, who know all the secrets of the underworlds. The gods of Amaravati were standing in one long row on the shore of the Molten Sea, watching the cloud drawing near. Among them, Kartendran Arth. Fingering his triakes, the god shivered, "If this thing attacks us, then the Lord Melchizedek have mercy on us." The cloud's hugeness was what confounded him. He had seen flying drag soft-ons before, but never so close. Finding himself face to face with one, he was shocked by the sheer magnitude of the being. And the music. The music was beyond anything his point could comprehend. As the flying dragon was approaching, inexplicable harmonies filled the spheres. Music multidimensional. Enigmatic vastness. The song of creation. Trillions of voices answering each other's calls. Eons of strangeness. Dreaming from before the cosmic night. Long. Long before the gods were born. When it reached the edge of the spheres of Melchizedek, the cloud stopped. The music went on. Unfathomable weirdness made sound. It reflected in the molten waters, fire at the bottom of the sea, mirroring the flames of astonishing blueness in the heavens. No one moved. Silent, the gods contemplated the festival of light. The language of the gods has 1,000 names for blue. Not one of them fitted the aurora that illuminated their sky. It wants something. Kartendran Arth intuited. It is waiting for us to do something. He turned to the god on his left, Gana. Eyes fixed on the horizon, the god of the golden helmet responded, "The web of love is what has brought it here. As it wants, so it will receive." the web of love, which shines the light of the Lord Melchizedek. All of a sudden, the white eagle of the gods took its flight. From the edge of the molten sea it darted skywards. There was a pause in the music. The gods held their breath. The silence after the sound of the flying dragons is packed with mysteries, endlessly profound like a cosmic night. Shaped as a white beam, the eagle traveled towards the foreign cloud. A frail beam of light, compared to the cloud's immensity. In the silence, infinity was held. As it reached the blue blaze, the beam faded. The white eagle of the gods vanished. Evaporated into nothingness? Engulfed by the cloud? It was hard to tell, even for the gods. Until the music was heard again. A different music. Extraordinarily melodious. It was still multifarious and untraceable like the dawn of creation, but its strangeness had softened. Its mathematical fire was infused with solar fortitude. It carried the white eagle's unbounded hardness. The flying dragon had comprehended the secrets of the web of love. A legend was born. On the shore of the molten sea, Lord Garner began to dance. And for an entire night, the gods celebrated the mysteries of remoteness. Through the eye of the white eagle, they beheld the cloud's glory. The flying dragon had come from beyond the abyss of the deep and the fault of eternity. It had lived through many a cosmic cycle, traveled through many a thousand spheres from the blue lagoon to the great ant, and from the bottom of the fault of eternity where the mother of the light can be seen smiling to the black night of remoteness where all secrets of the creation are concealed. Beyond time, space and infinity. Beyond prelayers and cosmic births, there are mysteries that elude the gods themselves. The white eagle invited the flying dragon to stay. This was not part of the order of the universe. A traveler through eternity, the flying dragon had to resume its course. At dawn the white eagle reappeared, emerging from the blue fire in the heavens. The spheres were vibrant with music, the gods intoxicated with elixir of infinity. The blazing clouds started moving. Slowly, at first, so the white soft hyphen gull could fly in its trail. The eagle followed it to the edge of the spheres of Melchizedek, where the web of love ends and the spheres of remoteness begin. This was where the legendary farewell was exchanged, forever love, flying dragon. Forever love, white eagle of the gods. The flying dragon disappeared in the immensity of remoteness. Echoes of its music kept resonating through the spheres for a thousand years. Ever since, whoever cognizes the eagle can contemplate not only its infinite spirit of whiteness, but also a tinge of this multidimensional blueness from beyond hyphen yond the abyss of the deep and the fault of eternity. And whoever crosses the great abyss can hear the song of the flying dragon, with all my mind, with all my heart, I am with you, even when I am far away. 1.275,000 years later, Atlantis. The temple of Isrim. When Gervin I first came back to his senses, Marka was standing by his side. Praise the great Apollo, Gervin of Thunder, ambassador of our Lord Melsoft-Chizidk, she whispered into his ear. A thunderous presence filled the room. Loud, hissing sounds, like furious snakes, shook the serenity of the night. They shattered the soft cocoon of Shim's soft hyphen mirroring starlight which patient Marka had woven around the sleeping body. From far away, a mysterious, foreign voice whispered, "Space matrix time reconnection completed." It was but an elusive breath, an improbable thread of meaning in a cosmos riddled with nebulous enigmas, but pregnant with ancient forces of incomprehensible magnitude. When she heard it, Marka shivered. And in a nearby chapel, the principal space controller of Isrim also heard the one soft hyphen drowse murmur. He was amazed, and he knew, led by Space Matrix, Gervin of the Brown Robe had returned from the remote spheres of the flying dragons. He was now re-entering his body, which had been hibernating for 32 weeks under the expert supervision and tender care of Marka, the young priest soft hyphen S of Melchisek. Completely disregarding the lawful necessity for slow transitions, cautious reconnections, and gradual reawakenings, Gervin smiled. Marka was not in the least surprised. She had learned the art of traveling from Gervin, she knew what the man was capable of. Despite being less than 30 years of age, Gervin, disciple of Orest, had conquered all the powers of the Masters of Thunder. Softly she chanted an ancient ritual lullaby which invoked her angel of highness, O great Mochasek, wings of infinity, silent fullness which moves the world, protect this newborn child. Using her voice as a thread, Gervin pulled himself back into his body all at once, and opened his eyes. Marka was a short, dark-haired woman from the counties of the south. She was not beautiful, but what made her special among all the priestesses of Issoft-Raim were her eyes. Looking into Marka's eyes was like catching a glimpse of a primordial glory that had long disappeared from the kingdom, an enchanting, irrational feast of light to celebrate the extravaganza that ran through the world shortly after it had been delivered. Young Gervin, who wore the long brown gown of the Masters of Thunder, looked into the eyes of the priestess clad in the orange dress of the Order of Mochasek. Light met light, and there was fullness. One pronounced Gervin. Welcome, friend. You are shining with the wonders of remoteness. Marka's smile was glowing. What extraordinary things you must have seen. Gervin kept smiling, silently rediscovering the magic of her eyes after his lengthy odyssey. To him, the journey had lasted not 7 months but 7 Issoft-Ons. For in the spheres of remoteness, time can be stretched, curved back, then concentrated all in one point, made to explode in lines that run in every Issoft-Shin and again can be stretched, and curved into an infinity of temporal Parasoft-Doxes. Gervin did not use his physical voice. After hibernating for so long, the rule was that no body part be moved for at least 3 and, preferably, 7 days. He spoke to Marka's consciousness through a voice channel of space. Marka, wise woman in the lore, what a joy to see you again. I have waited for this moment with such impatience, my friend in the lore. Marka used her normal voice. My body is teeming with wonderful energies. Much clearer than when I left. What a feat you have accomplished, Marka. I have none of the dull inertia that usually afflicts travelers when they re-enter their body. How can I thank you for your tender care? Do not thank me, Gervin, thank Mochasek the Great Angel. It is his light that I have projected into your body. Tell me, friend, how does it feel to be in a Issoft-Man body after having been spread in the infinity of space for so long? Like being squeezed into a tiny dot. The consciousness of the flying drag Issoft-Ons is incommensurable, Marka. Far beyond anything the human mind can Issoft-Ons. The visions you sent me were staggering. So you received them. The voyager rejoiced. Every day, every night, every hour. The images were so beautiful they Issoft-Ten made me cry with joy. I was especially moved by those you sent on your way back. The fault of eternity? Gervin asked, wondering how Marka's eyes were when she cried. And the abyss of the deep, where the Mother of the Light can be seen smiling. This was the most beautiful of all. Agreeing, Gervin brought the subject around. Marka, the flying dragons made me promise that the first thing I would do upon returning to the kingdom would be to inquire about the Order of the White Eagle. Unfortunately, I had never heard of this order. Can you tell me anything about it? It's a female order. Extremely ancient. Do we have any of them in our temple? I know there used to be a chapel of the White Eagle in the female wing of the temple. But it would have been at least hundreds of lawful years ago. I be soft hyphen leave the Order of the White Eagle has more or less disappeared from the King soft hyphen dom. Well, Marka, this is going to change. I have engaged the Word of Thunder. I will find the White Eagles and make a nest for them in Israim. Engaged the Word of Thunder? Marka laughed with wonder. But this is extreme, Gervin. The flying dragons have declared themselves the allies of the Masters of Thunder. You negotiated an alliance between the brown robe and the flying drag Issoft-Ons? Marka marveled. The flying dragons have bestowed a shower of gifts on my order, Marka. They have given us full access to their universal knowledge banks. And they have given the Masters of Thunder permission to use Space Matrix, the Issoft-Nominal guidance system which they use when traveling through the spheres. But on one condition, that the brown robe will give its total and unconditional support to the White Eagles, and even share with them some of its most pre-Issoft-Shire's secrets. Had I not accepted immediately, the flying dragons would have thrown me out of their spheres. Marco was in awe, the glory of ancient worlds ablaze in her eyes. This is quite a story. Poetry in remoteness. It started eons ago. And the flying dragons believe that one day the children of the White Eagle will fly to their spheres, and that an illumination of love will follow. They call it the flight of the eagles. And how are you going to find these white eagles? The flying dragons told me that Barkan Seer, the mighty master of Thunsoft-Da, knows one of the white eagles and will direct her to me. Barkan Seer. But doesn't the legend say it has been more than 600 years since he last incarnated in the kingdom? He now lives in Highness, but this is not an obstacle for the flying dragons. They have already contacted him and arranged everything. Gervin, you know what the wise people of Israim say about your teacher Orest? That he is not always easy to follow, but one never gets bored in his company. Well, this has become so true of you, my friend. Life with you is Ulsoft-Ways eventful. Gervin's eyes flared. Was this the right moment? Crossing the fault of it as Soft-Nitty on his way back to the spheres of Melchizedek. He had promised himself that the first movement of his physical body would be to take Marco's hand, an Atlantean way of asking her to marry him. Gervin decided it was too early. He cared about Marco, the delicate soul, and did not want to be abrupt with her in any way, not even with the sweet abrupt soft-ness of an untimely declaration of his love for her. Tell me, Marco, what has been happening in the kingdom since I left? Not only good news, Gervin. Still smiling, Gervin replied with one of the sayings of thunder, let us start with the worst. Bobros, the giant who lives in the valley of the necromancer, has been Soft-Rising the people who live in the forests of Nidavellir. And he has destroyed all the crops and the cattle in the north of the county, killing many peasants. Bobros, son of Bobros. The Nephilim giant has caused all this havoc. But there is much worse. He has used the magic of the Valley of the Necrosoft-Mancer to manifest ancient dark forces and spread them like a plague in the Fasoft-Ists of Nidavellir. Thousands of trees have died, Gervin. The elves and the fairies who escaped Bobro's black clouds have all fled from the county. If it continues like this, there will be nothing left of Nidavellir. The entire area is becoming a desolate wasteland of dead wood and barren rocky ground. And 2 months ago, a plague broke out in Isrim City, killing hundreds of people. It has soft-hyphenated panic in all the cities of the neighboring counties. It strikes people soft-denly and causes violent fits of convulsions. And it kills them after a few hours of shivering in terror. Has there been any outbreak of this pestilence in our temple? No, not yet. But in the northern part of the county, around Isrim City, it is spreading very fast. What does Orest of the Brown Robe say? 3 weeks ago, the Prince of Isrim came to the temple in person for a meeting with Orest. The day after, Orest left for the forest of Nidavellir, taking Ran Grisset, Esrevin and Melchard with him. This sounds very serious. Have you heard from Orest since then? 5 days ago, he sent me a message saying he wanted you to join him as soon as possible. He is waiting for you with Esrevin and Ran Grisset at the ford of Ereba, in the northern part of Nidavellir. As soon as possible? Gervin paused. Within reasonable limits, Gervin. Marco quickly added. She knew what a soft-resistible fire drove Gervin when it came to serving his master. Reasonable limits and thunder had never gone together well. Gervin now knew for sure this was not the right moment to take Marco's hand. And what about you, my good Marco? He inquired. What has been happening to you in the last months? Marco's eyes shone with the inspired light of her angel. Gervin, Gervin. Something wonderful has happened. I have applied for the high priesthood of my order and received a favorable response from the oracle. Are you going to become a high priestess of Melchisek? Gervin's eyes opened wider. Yes, Gervin. She answered joyfully. The first of the three vows has already been spoken. This meant she would never be married. Gervin turned his head and bit his lip, thus breaking the promise he had made to himself with the fault of eternity as his witness. Sensing his immense disappointment, Marco exclaimed, "Gervin, but... do you mean?" In a second she understood. She was shattered. Marco was a person of great humility. She looked up to Gervin as a shining warrior of the spirit, destined for the highest functions in Isrim. Despite his young age, he was already a famous healer, doctor of the law, and a teacher of several occult arts. Three times, the Prince of Isrim had asked him to become one of his ministers. Each time Gervin had declined, preferring to serve his teacher Rorest, the kingdom-famous Grandmaster of Thunder whose rare public appearances attracted crowds of pilgrims. Never had Marco suspected that a man like Gervin, Orest's heart disciple and close friend, could have wanted her. He was the most beautiful man she had ever met. She looked at the fine, curly blonde hair that had grown down to his shoulders while he was asleep, the noble beard she had trimmed a few days earlier, the high forehead of a man of the north, and the shining grey-green eyes which she had remembered every day of the last 32 weeks. Suddenly, his body was no longer that of a child under her care. The beautiful light in her eyes dimmed, and she cried. Devastated, Gervin didn't know what to say. Marco had been his friend and confidant for more than 4 years. She had not only been a constant support but also a source of inspiration for him, and he had come to admire her so much that he had elected to give up his passion for celibacy, judging that her company would make him a better man. 100 times in the last year he had nearly taken her hand. But he had wanted to be wise, and avoid rushing like a young fool in the law, and choose the best possible moment. Now that he had lost her, he found it difficult to believe he could have been so stupid. Marco was shocked by the cruel reality. "Would you have wanted me, Gustav-Van?" she asked in an uncertain voice. Gervin shrugged his shoulders. Her first vow had been spoken. It could not be withdrawn. But certain things in life are too important to remain unspoken. Marco needed to hear it from him. "Gervin, please, answer me. Would you have wanted me?" Drawing from the high fountain of thunder, Gervin brought down an infinite softness into the room. "Marco, wise woman, let me tell you something that Orest taught me a few years ago, when he announced that he would initiate me as a master of thunder. He warned that during the 9 months which separated me from the initiation, many alluring offers would be made to me, and a numb-soft-hyphen-bur of circumstances would concur to try and pull me away from my destiny in the brown robe. Make no mistake," Orest said, "these are temptations coming from the Prince of Darkness." 1 week later I was approached by a representative of His Supreme Majesty the King of Atlantis, offering me a high office at the Royal Palace. This was only the beginning. At one stage the Prince of Darkness even sent one of his emissaries, Aphelion, to put a mind-boggling proposal to me. Gervin paused, remembering the dreadful episode that had nearly cost him his life. "Marco, perhaps this is happening to you at the moment. I would hate to be the one sent to you by the Prince of Darkness to take you away from Molchasek. Gervin, I promise I will never mention this again if you do not want me to. But, please, I need to hear this from you. Would you?" Marco hesitated. "Of course I want you. I love you, Marco. I can't imagine a better husband for you than Molchasek. But if it hadn't been him, I would have been proud to take your hand." 1.3 The man who granted a personal favor to Barkansir Nadavan, "What has happened to you?" Gervin cried. Ereba, like the rest of the forest, had been ravaged. Gervin could hardly be soft-leave his eyes. The friendly woods where he had often come to seek inspiration, to listen to spirits of wise trees and chat with the frivolous pixies, had turned into a landscape of death. Every single stream had dried up. The lakes had vanished, as if sucked from below by some insatiable creature of hell. The leafless trees stood in shock, erect and with all their branches, not having yet realized they were dead. Gnomes, undines, elves, fairies, pixies, spirits of precious herbs, all had taken off, leaving behind them a parched ground devoid of any grasses. New crevasses were appearing by the hour, releasing noxious fumes that smelled like the filth of the underworld and thickened the mists with dark, ominous hues. When Gervin arrived at the ford of Ereba, He saw from a distance a silhouette clad in the hooded, dark brown gown of the Masters of Thunder. He hurried, wondering which of his companions was waiting for him. But as he came closer, he realized that the man was too tall to be either Rangrosset or Esrevin, or even Orest. Gervin was surprised. There were less than 10 Masters of Thunder in the Ensoft-Tyre Kingdom, whom he all knew well, and none as tall as this stranger. Yet the man wore the characteristic brown gown, and his energy was sealed with the unmistakable symbols of thunder. His light was shining bright, a warm aura of pure, liquid gold that contrasted with the black desolation of the forest. As Gervin approached, the broad-shouldered man pushed his hood back re-soft-veiling a square face, short black hair and a short curly beard. "Praise the great Apollo, Gervin, Master of Thunder." His greeting was delivered in a deep, me-soft-lodious voice. "Who are you, man of the law?" "My name is Barkan Seer, young man. Your master, Orest, send me to meet you and take you where he is waiting for you in the company of Esrevin, Rangrosset, and several of our brothers." "Barkan Seer?" Gervin laughed with amazement, for his teacher had taught him the superior value of laughing when one is surprised, or happy, or disap-soft-pointed, or appointed by destiny. "But I thought you lived in the spheres of highness." "I do. But today I reveal myself to you." Twinning his beard, "Thank God, Marco hadn't cut it too short." Dash Gervin took a closer look at the apparition from highness. Barkan Seer looked like a man, but his features were incredibly finely wrought, and he shone with a light that felt strangely familiar. "This light which is with you," Gervin exclaimed thoughtfully, "it has come to visit me many times before, hasn't it?"
"Many times, yes.
All glory to the teacher." Gervin joined his hands in front of his heart, remembering in a flash some of the difficult situations when the light had supported him. One of the most spectacular had taken place 6 years earlier, in the mountains of the county of Parenti, when Gervin had been caught in an Aver-soft-lanch. Barkan Seer's light had pushed him violently into a small crevasse, saving him from being crushed by a huge boulder that was rolling down the hill. But Barkan Seer's interventions had not all been so dramatic. In many simple situations of daily life, his beautiful light had inspired Gervin and warmed his spirit. "What gives me the immense privilege of your presence today, Master Barksoft-Hanseer?" Gervin asked with sincere reverence. "I have come to take part in an important ceremony which is to take place in the coming hours. And I need to speak to you, Gervin." "An important ceremony?" From his knowingness of thunder, Gervin immediately hated the sound of this announcement. "What ceremony?" "We are going to put an end to the obscene black magic of Bobros, son of Bobros. Let us go." Barkan Seer took Gervin's arm, and he started walking on what used to be a lovely path in the wood, now a track of jagged pebbles rounded by terrorized rocks and skeletons of trees. Gervin walked by his side, remembering the splendor that was Nidavan, and sending loving, pacifying thoughts to the rocks. "I believe the flying dragons have spoken to you about the White Eagle, Gervin. I hope I didn't make a blunder by engaging the word of thunder and promising to protect this order without knowing a thing about it."
"Not at all," Barkan Seer replied with the unique sweetness of those who are mighty among the mighty. "Had you said no, I would have had to materialize myself in the spheres of remoteness instantly and explain to our flying dragon friends that their nebulas of supermental light had stupefied your judgment, and that what you meant to say was yes. Plain yes, and yes, thank you. So is this what it takes to obtain the privilege of your divine intervention, Barkan Seer, a cosmic blunder?" Gervin smiled. "No wonder I have felt your presence around me so many times in the past. Not a good direction to pursue." Barkan Seer laughed, gently slapping Gervin's shoulder. "Will you tell me about the White Eagle you will direct to me?" Gervin asked. "A great saint, she is. And a knower of the powerful magic of the ancient days of the earth. You will learn a lot from her. But first you will have to train her."
"What is her name?"
"Te'ani." Barkan Seer pronounced the name affectionately, and with a touch of deference. Lady Tayani of the White Eagle. In which temple does she live?